Cunningham.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by Glenwood Inglewood Water. Pure, clean water delivered right to your home or office. Online at glenwoodinglewoodwater.com.
6 minutes now past 11 o'clock. Good morning. Welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Acton. Glad you could join us. Minnesota legislators are expected this week to approve a major overhaul of the state property tax system. The compromise plan was proposed by Governor Jesse Ventura, part of a broader plan that was laid out by the governor last Friday, as a way to head off a partial government shutdown that is scheduled to begin this Sunday. Senate Democrats say they support the governor's plan lock, stock, and barrel, but House Republicans say that while they support the tax plan, they have serious misgivings about elements of the spending bills that are part of that compromise, especially the governor's refusal to accept abortion-related provisions. So the countdown is officially underway in Minnesota with 1 week to go before the shutdown. There are several major issues still to resolve at the state capitol, and no guarantee that those issues will actually be resolved this week. Governor Jesse Ventura has come by our studios today to talk about the situation and also to take your questions. So if you have a question or a comment for the governor, give us a call. 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll free, and that number is 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Governor, thanks for coming in today.
Always a pleasure, Gary.
What's your best guess? Do you think legislators will get their work done this week?
It's hard to say. I mean, I really don't know what more I can do for them. I mean, we thought we broke the stalemate on Friday with the tax bill, but now, and as you said on the outset, the top of your program, the Senate said they'll take it lock, stock, and barrel, but now on the spending side, as you also said, the House is now balking. And I don't know, maybe they don't think a government shutdown is serious. You know, that's the only thing I can make out of it, because when you will allow one issue to shut down the government, that's something I don't support at all, and I would never let one issue shut down the government, because government is too far-reaching. It's too many things to too many people to allow one issue to grind it to a halt, and we're not out of the woods yet, you know, because I'm very disappointed this weekend. I spent the weekend baling hay because I had to out at my farm, because we've had so much rain that, you know, when you get that window of 4 to 5 days of sunlight, you got to get your hay crop in. I got back this morning and found out that conference committees barely even met this weekend. And I'm very disappointed over the fact that they should have had these spending bills ready to go today. They should have been passed through today, voted on them today or tomorrow, and move on and end this fiasco of a government shutdown. But apparently, they had quite a cavalier attitude this weekend. Less than half of the conference committees even met this weekend, and here they are in special session. And, you know, Gary, that's the way it's been the whole year with them. They spent 3 months throughout the regular session, in my opinion, not getting to the meat and potatoes issues, the important stuff, and then they pushed it to the 11th hour. They weren't finished on time, May 21st, when they were supposed to be done with their session. I called them back in with plenty of time to finish this special session, and yet here we are. I had to broker the thing on Friday, and here we are now this week. They still haven't got their spending bills in place so that they can be voted on. And all I'm asking of them is this. Take my proposal on Friday, take it to both your House floors, and either vote it up or vote it down. Vote it up or down. Let's get some accountability and a doggone vote on the floor over there for a change.
So not just a floor vote on the tax bill, but all the spending bills.
All of them. All of them.
Do you see
vote them up or down so that we can move on and end this ridiculous government shutdown situation that I mean, is now 6 days away.
Do you see these as your plan as a kind of all or nothing arrangement? That is to say that all the parts have to be approved? Or
yes. Yes.
You can't take a
you can't just pick and choose. We've got to do the whole thing this week, and they've got to do their jobs. It disappoints me a lot that, you know, that they were elected. They took an oath of office to serve the people of Minnesota and run Minnesota government. They did not take an oath of office to special interest. They did not take an oath to the Democrat Party or the Republican Party. They took an oath to serve everybody in the state of Minnesota, and it's high time that they do it.
Do you think the average Minnesotan cares that much whether there's a government shutdown or not? What do you hear from your buddies?
Well, you know, obviously, they probably look to the legislature, and when they see this cavalier attitude out of them, I suppose they shrug it off and think it's not too important. But most people that at all follow government realize it would be devastating. In fact, you know, there was just a story in the paper today that of the opinion of some economists say that if there's a government shutdown, that they're of the opinion that not saying it would, and I don't want to scare people into saying that, oh, the governor says this. This is not me talking. But there was a story in one of the newspapers that some economists think if there's a government shutdown, that could very well lead to an economic recession. Because you're talking 50-some thousand employees, the biggest employer in the state of Minnesota.
There are two major abortion-related provisions that have been talked about this year at the Capitol. One would impose a 24-hour waiting period before an abortion can be performed. The other would limit the prevent state money going to organizations that refer for abortions. House leaders have suggested they're not going to get both of those provisions into law, but they think it's reasonable to assume that since there are two of them and this is kind of a split the difference arrangement, that one of them ought to be passed.
Well, I think that they ought to, if and that's special interest talking right there, without a doubt. And I think the problem is this. If those are such important issues, then why do they need to be hidden in an omnibus bill? Why don't they just let them stand on their own? They can send those bills to me. If I choose to veto them, then they have the ability to override my veto and make it law. Correct? Instead, it's the underhanded, it's the dirty pool way of doing it. Stick the bill into an omnibus Health and Human Services bill, and then try to force the hand to allow it to happen that way. And that's all tactical decisions being made by special interest. That is what you have here. That's what it's all about. And my view is that would be like taking the conceal and carry bill, for example, Gary, and sticking it in the ag bill. You know, it'd be like putting it into the agriculture bill or putting it into one of the other bills over there. And that's a typical, as I said earlier, dirty pool politics way of trying to accomplish what you believe in. If you believe strong enough and if you have the support of the public, then any of these bills should have the ability to stand on their own, and they should not be put in an omnibus spending bill.
I know you've said you're going to veto any bill that contains those provisions, but if it comes, push comes to shove, and the choice is between vetoing a bill like that or shutting the government down, what are you going to do?
I'll have to judge it if it gets to me. You know, my view is that I don't support abortion. Never been involved in one, never would be. But the Supreme Court of the land said it's legal. I could use as an example a few years ago, if you recall, the Native Americans went to court on the ability to net fish. Now, I disagree with that. I don't think that one group of people should have an advantage over another group of people in fishing, especially in today. We're in the year 2001. And yet the Supreme Court ruled, and they ruled on something that I disagree with. Well, I don't run around then trying to, you know, find ways around it. Or if they want to challenge abortion, then challenge it in court. Go to court and prove that a woman doesn't have a right to choose or doesn't have the right to, you know, have control over her own reproductive organs. That's what, to me, it's all about. I don't support abortion. As I said, I would never be involved in one. The First Lady and I would never take part in one at all. But I also feel it's not my choice to tell anyone else what they should or shouldn't do. And when the highest court in the land has made a ruling, I respect that ruling, and I don't try to undermine it with, you know, see, the 24-hour waiting bill isn't what it appears to be. It is a bill designed to put providers out of business. Because, first of all, you can't get an abortion in 24 hours. So why do you need that? Second of all, I offered up, I said, well, rather than simply making a 24-hour wait to get a legal abortion, I said, let's put a 24-hour wait on all elective surgery then. Let's put a 24-hour wait on liposuction. Let's put it on vasectomies. Let's put it on any elective surgery that you need to get information 24 hours before you can have it done, and they won't do that. Why? Why wouldn't they do that for all elective surgery? Any surgical procedure is dangerous. Any elective surgery, you have to make the choice to do it. Why not put it across the board to all surgical procedures? And yet that they don't want to do that. They want it only for one thing. And the bottom line is you can't get an abortion, a legal abortion, in 24 hours to begin with. Now, what it's designed to do, and it has other, like everyone just limits it and said, well, it's a 24-hour wait. No, you have to look at the rest of it. There's more to it than just that. There's fines. If a giver doesn't provide the information properly, they can be fined. They can be taken to court. They have it to where only doctors or nurses can provide the information. Now, why is that? Why can't a receptionist do it? Well, it's simple. It's an easy way to tie up doctors and nurses all day long, isn't it? So that they can't perform a legal procedure that the courts have deemed legal.
Did sound, though, a few minutes ago like you might, despite your misgivings, sign the provision like that into law.
No, I didn't.
If it's a choice between that or a shutdown?
No, I didn't. No,
okay,
I didn't.
Just to clarify.
No, I didn't.
So you would veto that, no matter if it led to a shutdown or not.
Again, it's a sad case when a bill like that has to be stuck on a omnibus spending bill in an attempt to get it through because it doesn't have the power on its own to do it.
Governor Jesse Ventura is our guest this hour, and if you'd like to join our conversation, if you've got a question for the governor, give us a call, 651-227-6000. That's our Twin City area number, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free. That number is 1-800-242-2828. William, go ahead, please.
Hi. I just like to say that totally support Jesse Governor Ventura's policies on a lot of things. I'm glad that he's not being pushed around. I represent a lot of people my age in my early 20s here in Minnetonka and surrounding suburbs that totally agree with him and that we've, you know, supported him the whole time. So I'd just like to say that. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Well, again, it's a case that, you know, people can disagree with me on issues or positions that I take, but I think the one thing that people will be clear on with me is that I'm not being controlled by special interest. I don't think they can say that about the legislature. I don't think anyone could honestly say, because you notice how vehemently the same group that wants this 24-hour waiting period put on abortions, they're the same group that vehemently opposes campaign finance reform. So let's make that clear. See, they have a controlling power over there that they don't want to give up. And campaign finance reform could stop them and could take their power away from them. And I think it's just sad when you have, elected officials that are so dominantly controlled by special interest.
Joe, your question, please.
Hi, good morning. Well, first I just wanted to say that I support the governor. I think he's doing a really good job. And I think he's remaining very strong against the legislature. But I was wondering, Governor, do you think part of the reason that they took so long in going over your budget is because you proposed some very new good ideas with property tax reforms and with the funding of schools, and maybe they didn't really think you would propose that. Maybe it's so new and so fresh that they didn't know what to do with it, so they just put it off to the side and decided, well, maybe if they ignored it, it'll go away. Do you think that could have been part of why they waited so long?
I can't answer for them, but it's no excuse. I mean, you know, they came into session the first week of January. I, by law, have to give them my budget by the third week of January, which I did. They had from the third week of January to May 21st, and yet they sat there and nothing was done on the budget until the 11th hour. Instead, what did we hear about? Well, we heard about banning me from outside work. We heard about banning tattoos. We heard about banning pop in schools. And we heard that they finally fixed up the bill on hot dishes. That one got done, too, this year. They had to fix a bill on something was wrong with the hot dish bill. And so I feel just very strongly that it all comes back to the fact that a year ago when I was pushing so hard for unicameral, one house legislature, I was told by all the bicameral supporters that we didn't need a unicameral, that they could fix the problems with the bicameral system. Well, they did nothing to do that. Now, this whole situation could be solved very simply, and it could be done by themselves. All they'd have to do is say, we have, when we come into session, we have 45 days or 40 days or whatever to set our spending targets, and then we have another 30 days after that to approve the biannual budget, and then leave what I call all this fluff bill till the end. Instead, it's the system. The system pushes it to a poker game. The system plays poker to where everybody sits around with their whole cards, nobody wants to turn their card over, and they all wait for the other side to blink until you run out of time, which is exactly what happened this year. Nobody did anything. They sat on their hands. They waited until the May 21st deadline came. Nothing happened. Let me give you an example. When I pulled them in my office about 2 weeks before the end of the session, they were 0.7% apart on the budget. 0.7%. And I looked at them, the leadership, and I said, well, what is going to change between now and a month from now in a special session? It will be the same people at the table with the same differences and the same issues. Let's settle it now and get done on time. It couldn't happen. They couldn't do it. So what you've got is a system that is very inefficient, a system that breeds gridlock and gridiron, and until we change the system that they operate under, this is the type of government you're going to get. Now, a lot of people will argue. They'll say, well, inefficient government is good. Well, how do you know that until you try efficient government? You know, maybe we ought to try a more efficient government, and then we can always go back to being inefficient if we want to. And so to me, that's the big question here, is how do we make government? And to me, it comes from the top down. If you're inefficient at the top where you make the laws, well, then you're going to have wasteful spending and inefficient government all the way down to the lowliest worker at the bottom, because that's the way the system works and there's no example for them to improve by.
Steve, your comment, please.
Yes. First of all, I wanted to commend the governor for his stand. I agree that the legislators have been paid to serve the people of Minnesota, and they don't seem to be doing it. And actually, the governor just addressed what I really wanted to talk about. If there was a unicameral system of government in Minnesota, wouldn't this problem have been alleviated?
I believe so. I believe that, we talked about it before, that they've called special sessions in Nebraska, which has unicameral, and the newspapers, I know, reported that, and they threw this number out there, but what they didn't tell you was never once has Nebraska called a special session because they couldn't agree on a budget. Never once. Yet we now face that.
But you have said, in fact, you said on this program today already, Governor, again, that one of the big problems here is that, in your mind, the major parties are much too beholden to the special interests, mm-hmm. and that they're doing their bidding for them. Well, that wouldn't be any different under unicameral, would it?
Yes, it would, because you would get votes out on the floor. All I'm asking for right now is for both houses, the Senate and the House, to take my proposal from Friday and either vote it up or down.
Do you wish you had...
Vote it up or down.
Do you wish... Go ahead.
You go ahead.
I was just wondering, do you wish you had proposed that compromise plan a little earlier?
It's not my job. Gee, Gary, I'm doing both jobs right now. I'm doing the job of the administration, the job of the governor, and I'm likewise doing the job of the legislature. And that's not the way our system is designed to work. They're supposed to do their job. In order for tri-government work, which is judicial, legislative, and executive, each element has to hold their end of the log up. And the problem is the legislature's not holding their end of the log, and then they're looking to me to solve it. You know what I find humorous about it in its own sick way? I've only been involved in state government for 2.5 years of my life. The Senate Majority Leader and the Speaker combined have been involved in Minnesota state government longer than I've been alive. And I turn 50 next month. And they have over 50 years experience, and yet they had to turn to someone with 2.5 years to settle the problems for them, I guess.
Callers on the line from Marshall. Jamie?
Yeah, Governor, I would like to thank you for speaking out the way you are and sticking to your guns. If this was November, an election for some of our people who are representing us in the state capitol, I would be one of those people that would not vote for any of my representatives because of lack of coming with an agreement with the budget. Instead of spending all that time, whether schools should profit from a pot machine, spending all that time, they could have been working at the budget. And I just want to say that I support you and stick to it. And if it comes to a shutdown, I guess we'll suffer the consequences.
Well, you know, as sad as it might be, and I hate to say this, but maybe a wake-up call is needed. I'm a great believer in fate. I believe things happen for a reason, and that certain things, sometimes you don't understand why they happen in your life. But ultimately, 5 or 10 years later, you look back and you realize why things happen. And as much as I want to avoid a government shutdown, and as much as I feel myself and my staff have done everything possible to not have this happen, you know, we can't control it. We're not a dictatorship. I'm not a dictator. And so, therefore, if the legislature can't, why didn't they have those bills, those spending bills, ready to pass today? Why was there a delay? The tax bill, we finally got an agreement Friday. Why weren't those spending bills ready to go today? And instead, they're sitting there. They haven't done anything more than what they had done 3 weeks ago. And like I said, this weekend, over 50% of the conference committees didn't even meet. Didn't even meet over this weekend.
House Majority Leader Pawlenty has suggested that, well, there are some what appear to be almost irreconcilable differences, and he was talking about, well, we could pass what we can pass, but then maybe we just have to pass some kind of a stopgap for the other measures.
You know, I think it's very sad when elected officials don't have the spine to take it to the election, that they would risk a shutdown of the government for a political purpose. The government should continue to run and take your differences out into the election process. That's where they're to be fought. If there's a difference, see, what you have here too is like a children's game of marbles. One side thinks they have 6 marbles and the other side only has 4. And so they're going to pout and they're going to get angry and they're going to risk an entire shutdown until they feel they get 5 marbles apiece. And the problem is, all of that battle should be fought in elections. If they deem that Governor Ventura has done a lousy job, then take that case to the Minnesota people and let the people of Minnesota go to the ballot box and elect someone who they think can do a better job. But to risk a government shutdown, to me, is unconscionable. It also goes against their oath of office, Gary. They took an oath of office, not an oath to the Republican Party, not an oath to the Democratic Party, or in my case, not an oath to the Independence Party. You take an oath of office that you will run Minnesota state government and do your job. And to me, you're violating that oath of office if you'll let a political position or a one issue, could very well shut the government down this Saturday.
Let's get one more caller on here before we take a break. Tom, your question for the governor?
Good morning, Gary. Good morning, Governor Ventura. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, Tom. How are you today?
I'm terrific. Say, listen, you know, I think you've done a terrific job, and really these legislatures are causing this problem by not getting to the business as you described. At the beginning of the session, they had an opportunity to get to the budget, but they chose to try to pretty much get you off the XFL.
Yeah.
And I think that's where they wasted their time. And, you know, weeks went on, and they were meeting on this, and I used to tune in during lunchtime and catch this and their arguments. And, they had former governors there discussing this and ways to, you know, to curb this, which is obviously – the vast majority of the people in the state of Minnesota feel that you have every right to do what you would like on Saturday evening, regardless of if it's the XFL or whatever. But what I'm wondering is who sets the agenda for this, for the session, and then also how can they be held more accountable?
Well, the agenda for the legislature is set by the legislative leaders, the heads of the Senate, the heads of the House, and the conference committees and all of that. The only way they're held accountable is at the ballot box. That truly is the only way that the public can directly speak to them. Now, they are also held accountable, I'll take that back and rephrase it a little, by special interest money. And that's the one thing you never have to worry about with me, because I don't take special interest money. I didn't get elected on it. It's against the Independence Party's platform to accept special interest money. Unfortunately, that is not the case of the Democrats and Republicans. They can accept as much special interest money as they want, and always remember, money talks. And it's that money that helps to get them elected. So therefore, they are going to do what that money asks them to do, because they all, remember, a great majority of people make their decisions based upon what do I need to do to get reelected. And I can unequivocally in this microphone tell you today that I don't base my decisions on getting reelected. In fact, I haven't even decided whether I'm going to run again. But rest assured, if I do run again, my decisions that I make now will not be based upon, gee, what do I need to do to get reelected next year?
Governor Jesse Ventura is our guest this hour. Again, if you have a question for the governor, give us a call here. Our Twin City area number, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. We'll get to more of your questions here, and we'll get to some news headlines in just a moment. But a quick reminder, you probably heard this already this morning, but in case you've missed it, the end of the week, this week, is the end of our fiscal year. Time to balance our books here at Minnesota Public Radio. Rather than belabor you with a lot of on-air pledging, however, today and tomorrow we're urging you to pledge online, minnesotapublicradio.org. Very, very simple to do. And when you join online, you'll have an opportunity to enter the drawing for the new Apple iBook computer. Tomorrow's the deadline to enter. This week is the deadline to become a member, so we hope you'll take advantage of it to make sure we can get our books balanced by the end of the week. Right now, here's Greta Cunningham with some news headlines. Greta?
Thanks, Gary, and good morning. A ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court could boost efforts to reform campaign finance laws. A divided court has upheld remaining spending limits on money that political parties use to help specific candidates. The limits have been in place since the Watergate era. The 5-4 ruling doesn't address the broader issue of unregulated soft money, which was targeted by figures like Senator John McCain. But it does resolve questions about whether McCain's reform plan is constitutional. In a separate decision, the Supreme Court handed down a defeat for big media companies today. The court says freelance journalists may decide whether the information they sell may be reproduced in electronic databases. The court ruled 7-2 that compiling the material in electronic databases is different from other kinds of storage, in archives or libraries, for example. That means media companies have to get freelancers' permission before posting their work online. The case largely affects articles, photographs, and illustrations produced a decade or so ago, before freelance contracts provided for the material's electronic use. Six freelance writers sued the New York Times, Newsday, Time Incorporated, and other publications over inclusion of their work in electronic databases. Possible E. coli contamination is prompting the recall of thousands of pounds of ground beef and pork. Meat packer XL distributed the 190,000 pounds of meat to Kroger grocery stores in Alabama, Georgia, Kentucky, South Carolina, and Tennessee. In regional news, officials in Siren, Wisconsin say they're looking for more volunteers to help with the tornado cleanup. Organizers say only about a quarter of the work is done and more volunteers are needed to help remove debris. The tornado swept through Siren and parts of Burnett County last Monday, killing three people, destroying nearly 170 homes, and damaging several hundred more. The forecast for Minnesota today calls for partly to mostly sunny skies statewide. There's a chance of thunderstorms in the northwest today. It will be warm, hot, and humid today across the state, with highs ranging from 85 to 95 degrees. Right now in Winona, it's fair and 82. Worthington reports fair skies in 86. Fair skies in Rochester in 82. Duluth reports fair skies in 78. And in the Twin Cities, some scattered clouds with a temperature of 85 degrees. Gary, that's a check on the latest news.
Thanks, Greta. 25 minutes before noon, midday coming to you on Minnesota Public Radio. Our guest this hour, Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura, full bank of callers waiting with questions for the governor. But I wanted to ask one thing about the tax bill, which does seem like it seems like everybody has agreed that that's going to pass now.
Mm-hmm.
Whole point here is that property taxes will be simplified, significant reductions in all the categories. Question is, Governor, will property taxes stay reduced,
yes,
or will they just go up again?
No, because we've put in for the levy limits and all that stuff, so they will be held to the line for a number of years right now. That was one of the major concerns I had from the beginning. I said, look, I don't want to reduce these property taxes and then turn around and have the local governments immediately jack up the difference to where the people don't get any reduction. That's ridiculous. If you'll recall back, Gary, remember the first rebate we had, or supposed first rebate we had? It was supposed to be a $500 property tax rebate. Well, I can tell you personally, mine was about $38. Because what happened was they rebated it. Rather than rebating the money back to me, the local units of government saw that as an easy way to up your property value, and so you just had a transfer from state government to local government. And I want to be clear, too, you know, the state auditor came out with a big report about a week or so ago. I think a lot of our local units of government have a lot more money than they should have. And I say this from experience. When I was mayor of Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, they wanted to raise taxes because we were going to be $300,000 short on the next year's budget. Well, after looking into it and having a tax committee, a citizens task force formed, which I put a good friend of mine on there, it turned out the city of Brooklyn Park was sitting on $71 million of expendable, liquidable, clear cash assets, and yet they were going to raise taxes over a $300,000 shortage, $300,000. When they had $71 million, and at the time, Brooklyn Park's yearly budget was only about $14 million a year. So they had roughly six times what their budget was in liquidable cash. And the state auditor's thing a couple weeks ago proved that there are many, many cities in Minnesota sitting like that.
Ron, your comment for the governor?
Yes, Jesse, and that... First of all, and I'd like to know, Annette, how many rainy day funds does this state of Minnesota really have sitting out? And I'm talking the state, not the city. And two, and that is that the Independence Party, why don't they get a piece of paper out where people can sign, and that demanding that they let us vote on unicameral.
Well,
you got Roger Moe and... These guys, okay. There are 51 years there between the two of Swingham and him. And you have Wagner there, Carlson there, Anderson there. Day has been there for 100 years and that. But I guess the people must like it the way it is because they never get rid of the dead weight.
Well, what the problem is incumbents have a huge advantage. Incumbents have a tremendous advantage in getting reelected. They have name recognition. They have everything else. Getting back to your rainy day funds, we have only one that I'm aware of, and that is our surplus fund that we carry. I think it's to the tune right now of about $700 million. But that's not really that much when you look at a biannual budget of $27 billion. You have local units of government that have six times the amount of their yearly budget waiting in surplus for a bad day or a rainy day. How do you get rid of them? You vote them out of office. But that's very difficult because, again, there's a great fear for change out of the voting public. They have a distinct advantage being an incumbent. They have the money. They can build up the resources to do it. They have the rules in their favor. And without campaign finance reform, it's very difficult. Getting back to can you sign up? No, you can't. We don't have referendum here in the state of Minnesota. And again, that's because legislatures choose not to do it. Just like 2 years ago, they chose not to put unicameral on the ballot. They know if unicameral wins, roughly 65 of them will be out of their jobs. And I want to make it clear, that doesn't mean you'll be less represented in your district. It simply means you'll have one representative rather than two.
Now, in terms of letting people vote and the rest, my understanding is on the transportation issue, you're opposed to this idea of having a constitutional amendment put on the ballot, which would set aside 50 or 60% of the sales tax on vehicles for transportation funding. Are you willing to give on that?
Not at this time. In a full legislative session, it might be different, but when you're in a special session, you don't have time to be dealing with things like that. We need to get the basic core things done to avoid a government shutdown. And again, to let one issue shut down government is preposterous to me.
Mm-hmm. Are you satisfied when all is said and done after the very vigorous debate that's occurred in this state over the last 6 months, are you satisfied that the education funding question has been adequately addressed? Do you think there's enough going to be enough accountability for your part and enough money in terms of what the educators need?
Well, again, we reached a compromise on it. I can live with that compromise. I would like more accountability. I still am a believer that it's time to make teachers essential employees, and I believe I have the Constitution of the state of Minnesota to back me up on it, because our Constitution states that all of our children shall receive a K-12 education, and if there's a strike, that means the constitutional rights of those children are being violated. They are not receiving that education that the Constitution guarantees them. And, you know, that's the root of the other great problem. Your two biggest special interests, if you want the two heavyweights, are the MCCL and Education Minnesota. They're the ones that really call the shots over there, in at least in the legislature, because they're the big spenders. They're the ones that contribute to the elections, and they're the ones that hold the big hammer over everybody's head over there except mine.
Matt, your comment?
Hi, Gary. Hi, Governor.
Hi.
I just want to say thanks for serving the people so well.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Sure. My question is about this single issue, how it's potentially going to cause the shutdown. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be convenient for me if I felt a certain way about the issue that I could go to a website and vote on that single issue, and maybe people could call in that don't have access to a computer, and that the results of the vote could be seen so that the representatives would go by that and not cause this type of legislation.
Well, the problem you have with that, though, is that the special interest groups would have banks of voters or banks of callers, because they do that right now. You know, when they're unhappy, when special interest groups are unhappy with the decision that I make, I can always tell, because for like a 3-day period, you'll get nothing but these phone banks of callers calling in. So it's very difficult to determine whether you have one person calling one time, which would make it more of a fair vote, or is one person calling multiple times to get listed that way. And so that's the difficulty you have. The same with internet voting. You know, it's come up, well, why shouldn't we be allowed to vote in an election over the internet? I'm sure someday we will be able to. But the key is you must keep the integrity. Is it indeed that person voting? And is that person voting not being coerced in any manner in their vote? Like today, the old-fashioned way, you got to walk into that voting booth by yourself. No one else goes in there with you. And once you come out, you can say how you voted. It doesn't have to be honest. You know, you could tell to satisfy your friends, neighbors, and relatives, yeah, I voted for so-and-so, when the reality is you may not have. But see, and that's the privacy that instills that integrity in the voting process. By simply allowing people to call in or people to vote over the internet, you would run into a problem, because, like I said, the special interests would have banks of voters out there to try to deceive the election or to tilt it their way. And it wouldn't be necessarily an honest or fair way to do it, I don't think.
Jerry, you're next.
Governor.
Yes, Jerry.
I am very proud of you for your action in terms of opposing the single action group, the Minnesota Citizens Concern for Life. For nearly 30 years, they've tried to shut down government, coerce people in this state, and frankly, you're the first governor that's really had the guts to stand up to them, and I truly applaud you for that. However, I just want to say for the caller before, we should never vote on someone else's civil or human rights. And the Supreme Court made this decision.
I agree with you. Good point.
And anyhow, hurrah for you. And I'm proud of you and proud that you're the governor of this state at this time.
Thank you. Well, people should have understood that, you know, when I ran, one of the things that I'm very libertarian-ish on is the fact that I don't believe government should enter into your life on social issues. Those are decisions that you make as an individual. You have your beliefs, your family's beliefs, the people closest to you and your beliefs, and I believe that you don't need government intervention in those cases, that those are beliefs and decisions that you have to make, and that I'm not qualified to make those. I'm not qualified to make a decision on a moral issue for Gary Eichten. Gary Eichten has to make that decision.
Governor, when the rebate checks go out later this summer, you'll get credit for them as you have in the past.
No, wait, let me correct that.
I mean,
the bullish economy gets credit for that.
Well, right.
That is a great economy that's been out there that has sent the government more money than what the government's needed. Now, if you want to give me credit, just say I took a stance that when government gets more money than it needs, that it returns that money to the taxpayers that put it in.
Well, I mean, they're referred to as Jesse checks in some quarters. If there's a government shutdown, will ultimately this be the Jesse shutdown?
I suppose ultimately it probably could be, because I'm the governor of the state, but I think that informed people and people that pay attention will realize that it certainly wasn't the fault of me or my administration. We got our, you know, again, people have to understand that our system of government is set up in a tri-system. There's three facets to government: judicial, legislative, and executive. I can truly only run the executive branch. Yet this session, it seems I'm being asked to run the legislative branch also, which is fine. I'm willing to do it. But I still need their support in the end to get it done. They've got to take a floor vote. And I think people out there should send letters, they should call, and they should do whatever it takes and demand a simple floor vote up or down to what I proposed on Friday and the spending bills, get them all done at once and get them done no later than Wednesday of this week, so that we can have no government shutdown. Because if there's any more delay past Wednesday, there probably will be some form of a government shutdown. And that's going to affect people, I believe, a lot more than they think it will.
Jim's on the line from Brainerd with a comment. Jim?
Yes, I'm on myself, so if I lose you, that's why.
Are you fishing, Jim?
I want to thank the governor for what he's doing, though.
Thank you.
I guess the biggest thing I like about you is you tell it like it is. Well, everybody else wants to be wishy-washy and lie to you and pull the wool over your eyes. And that's one thing I see in you, is you just tell it like it is.
Well, I know no other way, Jim. By the way, are you fishing?
No, I'm not.
Oh, doggone it. You ought to be.
You
ought to be today. But, well, that's the only way I can be, Jim. You know, I'm not a career politician. When I'm done with this job, I'll go back to the private sector again. I have no desire to go on to higher elective office or any of that such thing. And so I have to be myself. And that, you know, that irritates some people. Some people don't like it. But I'm not going to change who I am.
Any further thoughts on whether you're going to run again? I mean, everybody who's called so far this hour is, very supportive of
you. Yeah, but let me say this, Gary. I won't run for governor just because I can win it. I mean, even if I feel that way, even if the polls say I can, I won't run for the job again simply just because I can win. I'm not a believer in that. I think that if there's still things that I want to accomplish, if there's things left unaccomplished, that will be the inspiration of whether I run again, and then also, most importantly, my family. You know, being governor is nice in many ways, but it's very stressful. It puts your family under the microscope. They don't run for office, and yet they're put under a microscope. You know, take, for example, the president's daughters now in this situation where, you know, the underage drinking or trying to get alcohol. If that were any other kids in the world, do you think it'd be on the front page of People magazine and all of the newspapers across America? Absolutely not. Now, I'm not condoning it, you know, and I'm not going to offer judgment. That's the president's personal life, and he and the first lady will deal with it, and it should be left up to them to deal with it. But it is very, very difficult on your family. It is very stressful for your family, and not just your immediate family. I mean, I'm to the point now, there's a local radio disc jockey here in town, the big gun in the morning, who has literally made it impossible for me and my family to go out to a public dinner, because he will broadcast things about it and talk about personal things of my family and attack my family. And so that I'll weigh also. Do I want my family under that type of scrutiny and loss of their personal freedom? So there'll be many decisions that I'll weigh before I come to my decision next summer of whether I run again.
You've talked about, you said you probably won't really decide until a week or a year from next month, actually, right?
Yeah.
Before the deadline.
Well, I may know before then, Gary, but I won't make it known until the filing. I may have made a decision. I may have made one right now.
Are you going to tell the party, Independence Party people, though, so if they can start trolling for another candidate if you're not going to run?
I'll let them know in due time, but I may know right now. But I won't make it known until next year. And the reason that I won't, too, is another one of my pet peeves. We're now getting elections 2 years before the election. I mean, my goodness, there's a Republican candidate out there now already running TV ads. I'm a believer that elections and ads and campaigning shouldn't happen until the year of the election. I mean, we get enough of it as it is. But I know why it happens, because people need name recognition, and a lot of these political parties go off polling data. And if they find a candidate that they have has no name recognition, well, their first knee-jerk reaction will be, well, let's start running ads 2 years ahead of time so people will know who the person is.
Said,
well, I'm fortunate I don't have to do that.
You said a big part of your decision will be whether there's anything worth left to do in your mind. Any big regrets that you, something you really wanted to get accomplished this session that clearly is not going to get done?
Something that I want accomplished, not this session, but forever and ever, amen, if you want to say it. I want unicameral put on the ballot. I want the people of Minnesota to have an opportunity to choose their form of government. And to me, that's a constitutional issue, so it should go to the people, not the legislature. And it's also an issue that if indeed the bicameral system's the better one, then won't it prevail? And if indeed the bicameral supporters are confident that they have the best system, then why don't they have the courage to put it out there? If it's the best system, I think the Minnesota public will choose the better of the two systems. And they ought to have enough courage and enough honor and enough whatever in their current bicameral system that they would have the guts to put it out there and let the people make a choice. That's a big issue for me. I would love to see a vote on whether we go bicameral or unicameral, one house or two houses.
Christine, we're almost out of time. Very quick comment for the governor, please.
Yeah, I just have a quick question. First of all, I wanted to say I really do support the governor and what he's doing. And I wanted to find out, is there anyone or any group of people that look at the programs that are already currently in place for the government and ones that aren't working, that they can eliminate them? And that, I would think, would free up a lot of money that could be used for other successful, more innovative programs.
Well, that good question, and that's something that you work at with your commissioners all the time, and something we did before submitting our budget this year. I told all of my commissioners, we did a little, I won't call it a game, but we called it a challenge to them. For every $2 of new spending they wanted, they had to eliminate $1. They had to eliminate programs that they felt were outdated. That falls to your commissioners, and that falls to your administration to go out there, unless it's legislatively done. You know, I mean, if they pass it in the legislature, then you have to carry it out naturally, which programs are that way. But I've also been a big advocate that every third year or every fourth year, we should come back and simply repeal laws. Have a session where they don't pass any new ones. They just simply go through and repeal old ones. Yeah, I would tell anybody, here's a fun thing for people to do if you really got nothing to do someday. Go over to the Secretary of State's office, and when you walk in there, take a look at the volumes of books on the wall. I mean, it will cover a complete wall from head to ceiling of books. Do you know what they all are? They're all the laws of the state of Minnesota. Now, people tell you ignorance of the law is no excuse, right? That's a standard saying. Well, my goodness, how can you be familiar when you have an entire wall of books that are all the laws of the state of Minnesota dating back to when the Minnesota was formed, and we're supposed to be aware of all of them?
Governor, we have to run. Thanks for coming by today. Happy birthday in advance.
Oh, thank you, Gary. Although, you know, I turned 5-0. I don't think it's that happy when you turn 5-0. I kind of sit back and go, gee, it's a half a century. Unbelievable. But thank you very much. I appreciate it. Look forward always to doing your show.
Governor Jesse Ventura, our guest this hour of our midday program. Thanks to all of you who've been with us this hour, especially those of you who called in or tried to call in with your questions and comments. Quick reminder, again, this is our membership drive, but today no pledging on air. Join us online, minnesotapublicradio.org. When you log on, you can enter our drawing for the Apple iBook. 5 minutes now before 12.
is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 25th of June, 2001. The Korean War began on this day in 1950 when the North Korean People's Army crossed the 38th parallel and invaded South Korea. More than 3 million persons lost their lives in that war. And many years later, an American veteran, Harold Richards, wrote, "I was not brave, nor was I a hero in any way. I was just as scared as anyone else under fire. I took part in 5 major battles and 2 invasions. I suffered the cold of North Korea along with every GI during the Northern Campaign. There were so many unsung heroes of that war. Only men there could understand." It's the birthday of mystery writer Dorothy Gilman, born in New Brunswick, New Jersey, 1923, author of the Mrs. Polifax Mysteries, about a lonely widow in her 60s who applies for a job with the CIA and is chosen for special assignments in exotic locales. One was made into a movie starring Rosalind Russell, another into a television film starring Angela Lansbury. It's the birthday of George Orwell, born Eric Blair, in India, in the town of Motihari. Moved to England as a child, went off to prep school, where he was looked down upon by his headmaster and his wealthy fellow students. And on account of that experience, Orwell concerned himself with the lives and the struggles of the poor. He lived in poverty for more than a year to write Down and Out in Paris and London, 1933. Best known to us, of course, is the author of Animal Farm, All Animals Are Equal, But Some Animals Are More Equal Than Others, and 1984, written in 1949, the year before he died of tuberculosis. It was on this day in 1903, Marie Curie announced the discovery of radium. And many years later, in a lecture at Vassar College, she said, "We must not forget that when radium was discovered, no one knew that it would prove useful in hospitals. The work was one of pure science." It's the birthday of the radical writer and editor V.F. Calverton, born in Baltimore in 1900, founded a magazine in 1923 called Modern Quarterly, in which he published the work of black writers and intellectuals, including Zora Neale Hurston and Langston Hughes, when it was not particularly popular to do so. Lived in Greenwich Village and wrote many books, including Sex, Expression, and Literature, and The Bankruptcy of Marriage. It's the birthday of the playwright and producer George Abbott, born in Forestville, New York, 1887. He wrote many plays and musicals, The Boys from Syracuse, Where's Charlie, Pal, Joey, The Pajama Game. Wrote his autobiography, Mr. Abbott, in 1963, but lived 32 more years and died at the age of 107. The Battle of the Little Bighorn was fought on this day in 1876. General George Armstrong Custer and about 300 U.S. soldiers up against about 4,000 Sioux Indians, led by Crazy Horse and Sitting Bull. And it was on this day in 1857 the novelist Gustave Flaubert went on trial in Paris for publishing a morally offensive work, Madame Bovary. He was acquitted, and the book came out the same year. Here's a poem for today by Calvin Forbes, Next of Kin. Your name, the one I wrote down when asked. Your name, the one I carried around, just in case. Your phone number, I knew better than my own. Yours never did change as I moved around. Way back from jump, always the same, eventually. No matter the friends I found, you were next of kin. Next of Kin, a poem by Calvin Forbes from The Shine Poems, published by Louisiana State University Press. Used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the people at 21NorthMain.com, where book lovers find millions of gently read classics, bestsellers, rare masterpieces on the web at 21NorthMain.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Regional broadcast of the